My name is Matt Bassett. I'm one of the leaders at Church of Christ the King, and I'm probably the leader that's most passionate about business, and that's why this initiative, putting on these events every year, is important to me. It's important to us as a church that we communicate to you that we love business. Actually, God loves business, and if that's a new concept for you, then perhaps that will get unfolded during the course of the morning. But I want to say to you this morning, we've got some great guests. Julia Chanteray, who is president of the Chamber of Commerce, is going to be joining us a little bit later. And we're going to be putting a sofa here for her. There's a line on them. We can fire all sorts of questions at her and have a lot of fun with that. I'm going to ask our panel speakers as well, our seminar speakers as well, also to join us, along with John Virgo, who leads the senior team here. He's going to be speaking in a moment or two. I just wanted to say thank you in advance to Paul Hatcher. Paul and his wife Jane are here. Give us a wave, Paul. Paul's going to be speaking on the psychology of sales. And Jill Sherwin here, who runs and co-owns Brainwaves UK. She's also going to be communicating about budgeting and cash flow as well. You might wonder, why these two topics? Well, budgeting and cash flow and the psychology of sales are the two areas that I've discovered and a number of my team have discovered are where people are itching. And so we want to help you scratch that this morning and just kind of find your way through that, navigate your way through those tough things when you're running a business. Maybe you are here this morning and you're just thinking about starting a business. Perhaps you are long in the tooth and have got loads of wisdom, but are humble enough to come and network and communicate some of that truth and maybe even learn something as well this morning. Let me just quickly draw your attention to the program then. So I'm going to introduce Joel Virgo in a moment or two, who's going to address us. And session two, which we'll actually stay in this room, it'll be like a 5-minute chit-chat break for you guys while we reorganise ourselves. But Jill Sherwin is going to speak on budgeting and cash flow. Then we'll pile downstairs for a well-earned leg stretch and coffee break. Following that, we'll be back up here to listen to Paul Hatcher on the psychology of sales, which I'm sure is going to be lots of fun together. And then we're going to have this panel where we want you to begin to think about questions that you might have that you've actually come with, or perhaps questions that get provoked in you as the morning goes on. You can use the number that's on this program. You can text your questions to 0786201073. We're going to be filtering some of those and using those to address the panel, or you can just shout them out from where you are if you're feeling brave enough. I usually find that the questions that come in by text are people who are nervous of asking them out loud. So, but that's okay. That'll be excellent time. And then we've got a fourth session as well, which we'll communicate something about a little bit later on. Well, that's the format. That's like the roadmap for the morning. So without further ado, let me just hand over to Joel Virgo. Let's welcome him as he comes.
Joining him in the level of passion, but I have no hope of joining him on the level of ability. I think he's definitely got the most head for business out of the team, but I hope that I can help you nevertheless. Let me just give you some rough idea of where I'm going with this session that I have with you. The reason we do this, the goal of these days is there are a few pieces to it. There's one side in is that we simply want to encourage you. Business is a tough life, and self-employment, business in any sense, creates a lifestyle of challenge, risk, strain, difficulty of various kinds. Besides that, this is a tough time. We're still in the midst of a long season of recession, and so anything we can do as a church to bring encouragement and support to you is going to be worthwhile, I trust. Also, I hope that we can bring some help to you in terms of skills and insight and wisdom. And I'm sure that there'll be more of that coming in the sessions later, practical insight and help. As well as that, I want you to feel that it's an opportunity to connect well, to keep connecting with one another, to keep building good networks of relationship for business. And I think we want to keep doing this kind of thing regularly. Annually at the moment, in any way that we can keep regularly creating context to generate relationship, which can be of all kinds of support for you guys in the future. And then finally, to connect you with our vision so that you feel you understand what we're going for, what Church of Christ the King has in mind. I know that's directly relevant for many of you because you're part of this church. There'll be one or two of you here who are not part of this church, who are perhaps finding your way in, or maybe you're not a Christian, you don't see yourself as, you don't have any clear Christian faith as such, but you're here in a different capacity. You are utterly welcome. We're thrilled that you're here. I guess for the majority of us, though, we see that this is our church, and so we're thinking, how is it that I am able to serve? What practical role do I bring? And I'm also aware that you can feel the urge that's put upon you as an individual in the church to serve in a whole range of different capacities that can be presented to you. We need people to help with this, we need people to help with that. Please could you run a small group, could you help with the children's work, could you get involved with running the lights or the desk or the stewarding and so on and so forth. And all of those are things that we would continue to want to ask you to help with. We believe wholeheartedly in what we do here week by week and across the different sites at Shoreham and at the racecourse. We want to make sure that what we're doing at the weekends is good, that we're knocking it out of the park, that we're doing a good job, that we're serving the city well, week by week by week by week by week. And then through all the other various projects that we're committed to as a church. But in reality, you can be serving the vision of the church in quite different ways as well. You're serving the vision of the church just by doing a brilliant job in your given vocation. That's part of the vision. That's part of what God has called his church to do. In Scripture, it's very clear that the church is called to serve him faithfully and fruitfully in the eyes of the world, in the context of the world, not separate from the world, not just in our meetings, in our places of sort of gathering, but also in our places of scattering. And by serving faithfully, fruitfully, by holding him as the highest goal of your heart in the context of business, you're fulfilling the vision of the church. And so it's important for us to be able to help you to feel that part of your world, that substantial, probably the majority of your time, exhausting part of your world, part of your life, connects with the vision of the church. And actually, it could be that it connects with the vision of the church in more significant ways than you realize. So there's a need, I think, for guys like me to come into this environment from time to time and just give you guys some idea of what it is that we're doing, where is it that we're going. And it could be that sparks fly, it could be that in your own hearts, in a quiet way, you begin to sense an excitement and an energy and enthusiasm and a potential for helping to shape the outcomes in ways that people like me can't necessarily think of. I think pastors are often the people who set the trajectory in a church community. They're not usually the people that see where the trajectory goes further down the axis. I can sit with a team of leaders in the church and say, this is where I think we should be going. I have no idea what that will mean for, you know, X, Y, and Z at the bottom of the line. And I need people who are more able than me to work out where this will affect this and how it will affect that. People who will ask me difficult questions. What about the budget? What about small groups? And I'll be thinking, I don't even know we had a budget. What's a budget? You know, so the realities of practical outcomes are often actually the problems of people who bring different kind of perspective to the table. It's for people like me to set the trajectory. So let me give you a few comments on where our trajectory is setting. Let me start by saying we are in a season of growth and multiplication. In a sense, that's not unique. I look at the Bible and see that Jesus said that his kingdom is like a mustard seed that grows and grows and grows until it becomes the biggest tree in all the world. And there's this intention and ambition in the heart of God for his church and the people of his kingdom to grow and multiply. And certainly here at Christ the King, that's our story. We've started small and grown. We're in a season where we're multiplying into many locations. This September we'll be in our fourth location. Most of you know these facts, but I want to encourage you with the progress and the excitement. It does take a huge amount of revving up and preparing and planning and thinking and praying these things through for it to come out as well as it has done. And when I reflect on what's happened in the church over the last 7 years, when my wife and I moved down to Brighton, back to Brighton to pick up leadership here, I am amazed at how healthily things have worked out. Churches will tend to have a kind of a life of excitement and growth and energy, usually within the space of a generation. And the normal pattern is for churches to sort of decline, and the age of the average member will sort of dictate the life expectancy of the church as well, if you know what I mean. And that's the common story. For a church to have longevity across the generations is actually quite unusual. I don't just mean that it could still exist over generations, that's not unusual, but for it to thrive into generations is. And for it to thrive and grow and multiply is unusual. And I look back and I just keep thanking God for what he's done. We're in a very encouraging phase. New leaders coming through, new initiative and excitement about continuing to reach out to our city and serve it as well as we can. We want to keep opening services, meetings that happen on the weekends again and again. By January, we hope to be at the point where we have 9 or 10 services happening. At the moment, there's 5. So this is a season of stretching. But it seems that God has blessed us as we've taken big risks. Starting new services, thinking, will anybody come to this building after we've sent people to that one and that one and that one? And finding that actually we grow more by sending than we did by retaining is an exciting experience. And it shows that God's honouring the risk-taking adventurousness amongst the team of guys that I have the privilege to serve with. So we're excited about that. More services to launch. And a vision, an ongoing vision for cities. We thank God for the history we have as a church of serving a global movement, New Frontiers, that started churches all over the world. Increasingly, we feel an excitement, especially here in Brighton, about how we can touch different cities, both here in this part of the world and into Europe, and perhaps even beyond. I recently was reminded of a statistic, which I guess we probably are all vaguely familiar with, that urbanisation is happening at such a rapid rate that it could be within our lifetime 75% of the world's population will be in cities. It crossed the 50% mark within the last 3-4 years. This is a phenomenal time for urbanisation. And at the time of reading that statistic, I was provoked by a thought of a pastor of a large church in New York who made this famous comment, or a comment in one of his books. He said it could be that what's happening with urbanisation is preparation for a great move of the gospel, a great impact of the gospel on society, as it seems God is kind of garrisoning people into cities. Perhaps he has something intended that we don't really realise. We're so used to seeing, historically, cities as places of godlessness and so on. That's not the case with the Bible. The New Testament church thrived in cities. The early church took city after city with the message of Jesus Christ and brought the blessing and all the goodness of the gospel. And that's our heart, to repeat that kind of process. We want to continue to serve our city as a people who can bring blessing, can bring answers, even answers to the longings in people's hearts. I'm sometimes asked, what is the phrase that would kind of summarize the vision of the church? And to be perfectly honest with you, I'm not satisfied that I have a brilliant phrase that would work. Some of the phrases I come up with are kind of loaded with religious meaning that could even come across wrong. We talk about sort of turning idolaters into worshippers, which is meant to sound good, but it sounds pretty threatening and aggressive if it's misheard. But the point being that people do worship. We live in a city of worshippers. People are born worshipping. They're born with longings in their hearts, born with yearnings. We can't not worship. It's part of what it means to be human. We build our lives on things that matter the most to us. We all do it. It could be our wealth, it could be our reputation, our prestige, it could be our career progress, it could be our family. It could be a particular relationship. It could be anything of such worth that we would say, this is the deal breaker. This is a non-negotiable. Nothing will ever come before this. The Bible calls that worship. That's what we are meant to give to God. And the suggestion the Bible makes is that our problems come from giving it to the wrong things. If we line up our affections and our loves and our longings so that we put him first, life makes sense. I often say we're made to worship God like a toaster is made to toast, or like a hoover is made to hoove. That's what we're made for. And if we're not plugged into God, we're like a hoover not plugged into the wall. It's a strange object. It's a strange thing that you kind of, we perhaps try and invent various meanings for the purposes. What, this hoover's good for this, you can use it for this. When you plug in, suddenly, now I really do know what it's for. And people are made to know and worship God. They have longings to worship. They have desires and yearnings. When they're plugged into him, life begins to take shape. And so we want to see people find him. We want to see people come to know him and honor and love and worship him as they were born to do. But we also want them to learn to, we want to know how we're going to do that. We want to build a strategy and a plan to see that fulfilled. And so we talk a lot about these six headings as leaders. We talk about how we pray regularly. God's called us to something that's impossible. It takes prayer for these things to actually happen. They don't happen because of good intentions. They happen because of actual prayer, seeking of God. We talk about learning cultures. Very easily, Christians can simply go into communities and cultures with a kind of a blindness about context, without thinking about language and what people understand, what they understand by the way we're talking. The way the church comes across so often, including our church, is not the way we intend it to. We don't intend it to say, to mean the things it means to those who are hearing us, because there's a need for contextualizing, for thinking about the culture. How are we communicating? What are the ways in to communicate well? And in thinking that way, we're just doing what Jesus did. That's the way he came to us. Jesus didn't hide behind a cloud in the heavens and yell at the world with a megaphone. Jesus came into the world. He actually spent 30 years listening before he even started preaching. He was watching, learning, growing in his awareness of the culture he'd come to. And we as Christians need to emulate his example. We need to befriend our city, to connect in a meaningful way, building relationships so that when people find that they're looking for answers and wondering about eternity, wondering about truth and hope, and real issues of guilt and shame and how to deal with life and the real issues of worship I was talking about a moment ago, there are friends, there are Christians they can talk to and ask questions of in a way that's meaningful to them. We want to open front doors. We want to create environments where the gospel of Jesus is celebrated and where it's experienced in a meaningful way on a regular basis. This is why we start new services, new sites, lots and lots and lots, not just so that Christians can have meetings for Christians' sake. That's a good thing in itself, perhaps, but the reality is, while we're in this world, you can't have just Christian meetings for Christian people, because we are in a world that's made up of people who are without faith, but perhaps need to find Jesus, and so we want to create many, many front doors to connect with people. We want to build community so that we don't just have Sunday gatherings. It's easy to hide in a crowd. And even 100 people on a Sunday, that can still be a crowd big enough to hide in and to not actually find yourself having to open your life up. Community is how we get changed. When we have the edges, the rough edges knocked off us, where we connect in a meaningful way with friends continually through life. Christian brothers and sisters who help us to change. The way that we finally raise culture makers. That our goal in seeing people transformed by Jesus Christ is not only for their own sake, but so that they can be agents of his change in the community, bringing his blessing, what the Bible calls his shalom, his well-being, his wholeness to the world around us. And raising culture makers has a lot to do with how this day comes in. You guys are all culture makers. Everybody is in some respect, even those without any Christian faith. We're making culture all the time. Sometimes we don't realize we're doing it, but we're creating the world in which people find themselves. And the call on the church is to raise up culture makers for Jesus, to see culture shaped according to his values. And so we want to continue to do that in proactive ways in terms of what, how we teach people, how we disciple people, how we train people in their daily work and life and all normal experience, as well as in their spiritual side of life, if you know what I mean. I think the way that we're stirred as well, as I say, is to continue to reach beyond just Brighton, to keep reaching out to cities beyond. And I was writing about this a few years ago. I wrote a document which I gave the title Permission to Dream. And I put in it the beginning, in the first couple of pages, a thought that occurred to me when I was reading in the New Testament a few years ago about how the Christian movement, if you like, started in the villages around Galilee. And the disciples of Jesus were a small group of mostly rural, relatively low-experienced people, monocultural people. And yet by the end of their lives, this small group of leaders whom Jesus gathered to start the movement, many of them, most of them, had travelled vast distances, had learned new cultures. Many of them would have had to have learned new languages and had reached city after city after city. The writings of Luke start in Luke chapter 1 and end in Acts chapter 28. He wrote both those books. The book of Luke starts with a peasant girl in a village in Galilee, in Nazareth. It ends with a man speaking in the city of the emperor, the center of the world at that time, the city of Rome. And he sets out this trajectory, something that has small, humble beginnings and yet ends in a global context. I remember reading that thinking, I remember starting my personal Christian life in things like church meetings, in a relatively small context, traveling with my mum and dad to villages around Sussex to help churches, going to Bible weeks, as we called them, camps that happened in the summer, literally in a field, in a village, out in Sussex, and going to those regularly, and kind of growing up in a very thriving, vibrant Christianity with real, authentic life and power. And as I've grown up, I've realized that that's not where it's supposed to end. God's longing is to get into the heart of the key cities of the world. And we need that to happen. The truth is that culture is being shaped as we speak in cities all the time, being shaped, it seems, it's often in directions that we would be saddened by. The reality is that as society, as Western society, has cut itself off from its spiritual anchorage, the actual meaning of life, what we're here for, any sense of value and purpose in life, is jeopardized. And to even talk about human rights, we're very good at parroting that concept, human rights, but as the Princeton philosopher Nick Walterstorff said recently, cut off from the message of Christianity, human rights, it's hard to even explain what they are. Because if there's no God, if there's no eternity, if there's no ultimate sacredness in the universe, what who are we to say what rights are? Who has rights? And this a quote from a philosopher, Derrida, which I'll put on the screen, puts it like this: today, the cornerstone of international law is the sacred. The sacredness of man as your neighbour made by God. In that sense, the concept of crime against humanity is a Christian concept, and I think there would be no such thing in the law today without the Christian heritage. Now, Derrida, not a Christian at all, a total atheist, but putting his finger on a major problem, saying without Christianity, effectively without churches, without people who walk with God and take the eternal values of God into the real world, society gets further and further from anything sacred, and that's not good news. Life becomes cheaper, life becomes less and less meaningful, less purposeful, and I'm convinced that he's right about that. Therefore, it means that it's not just important for the church to communicate by preaching and proclaiming and confronting, but also by being in the world, bringing the values of eternity into the here and now. And not just on a public level, but also on an individual level. People without God don't just lack morals and values by which to live, but there's a strange emptiness. There's a quote by Tocqueville, the great commentator, social commentator, who said, "The incomplete joys of this world will never satisfy the human heart." strange melancholy, often haunting inhabitants of democracies in the midst of abundance. Even after recession, even in the midst of growth, even when businesses turn around and things flourish and we get into significant growth and expansion and ambitious enterprise starts to launch, there's still an emptiness, a sense of melancholy in the human heart that haunts people, even in a context of abundance. This is where the gospel needs to come in. And it will come in all kinds of ways, in ways that will change people's lives. But if we don't see that it involves business, it involves a practical building of life and institutions and organizations that serve communities, even, yes, in the context potentially of making a profit, then we are leaving a huge gap. Let me suggest another quote from a quote by Blaise Pascal, a French philosopher. He said this: men despise religion. They hate it and fear it. They hate it and fear that it is true. To remedy this, we must begin by showing that religion is not contrary to reason, that it is venerable, to inspire respect for it. Then we must make it lovable. I don't think he means lovable in the kind of Santa Claus, Barney Bear way. I mean, he means kind of lovable in the sense that people understand the attraction of Christ. To make men hope it is true, finally, we must prove it's true. And that, again, that's where we as a community, even as a business community, come in. By finding ways to show the love and goodness of God in ordinary working life. Just our business, through the aims of our business, even through the results of our business, we can bring an attractiveness about Christ, show the attractiveness of Christ to the community around us. I was thinking about this recently, and I'm beginning to close. I came across, quite by accident, a piece of church history. I loved history. Some of you are thinking, well, I was waiting for this time. I've always loved history, and I love church history. I'm fascinated by certain eras in it. I have to confess, there are certain parts of church history I just don't do. I don't know much about. I think it's hard to know some things about certain eras because there's so little written about, and what there is written is very obscure and hard to take seriously. And so I've not really ever researched, but I came across, it's funny, it was actually one of my kids' books, a children's book, a local history book for children. And I was just opening it, reading it through with one of them. And I came across this character, St. Wilfrid. And this is a fascinating thing. Obviously, Brighton, Sussex, this part of the world hasn't always been Christian. There was a time when it was completely pagan. There was a time when people had never heard of Jesus Christ. And the chief missionary to bring the message of Jesus to Sussex actually came down from the north of England, from the Celtic churches that were becoming incredibly successful up in the north and the kind of Northumbria area, over from Ireland where St. Patrick had been up to Scotland. So he came down from the north, this man, St. Wilfrid. And I was fascinated to think, how did he do it? What did he do that was so effective in reaching this part of the world? And this is a fascinating quotation from the Venerable Bede, surely the greatest name for a historian ever come across. The Venerable Bede, he writes just a little quotation, one paragraph from what he says. For the bishop, when he came into the province and found so great misery from famine there, taught them to get their food by fishing. So what we're saying is that this man, he came into a context where there was quite severe famine and drought. I mean, it's hard to believe right now. In this part of the world, there was actually a long season of genuine drought where there was a hosepipe ban at least, okay, or worse than that. And his way of dealing with the drought and the famine, which was massively damaging agriculture and cultivation, he taught them to get their food by fishing, for their sea and rivers abounded in fish, but the people had no skill to take any of them, except eels alone. The bishop's men, having gathered eel nets everywhere, cast them into the sea, and by the blessing of God, took 300 fishes of diverse sorts, which, being divided into three parts, they gave 100 to the poor, 100 of those to whom they had the nets, and kept 100 for their own use. I just stop there and find it fascinating that the man who brought Christianity to this part of the world was an entrepreneur. He was a wise businessman who had a head for skilling people up in life skills that they needed to prevail through a season of recession, and in not only generating profit, but generating aid for the poor. So 100 fish, I mean, this is obviously talking about one anecdote, but I think it speaks of the flavour, fish flavour, of what he would have been doing over years. You can't change Sussex through one fishing expedition. This is probably an anecdote which describes a trend in his life, the way he did things. I think that's what Bede's getting at. By this benefit, the bishop gained the affections of them all, and they began more readily at his preaching to hope for heavenly blessings, seeing that by his help they had received those which are temporal. That's extraordinary. I read this months ago, I thought, that's what I need to tell the business guys on that day. That Brighton and the surrounding area was first reached by the message of Jesus through business enterprise. Through people putting their minds, how can we serve the poor? How can we help skill people up? How can we help people get through a season of drought and difficulty? And how can we use it as a way to proclaim, open a door up for the gospel of Jesus Christ? This has been done before. It's been done in a way that changed history. So it gives us a great precedent for what can happen. My expectation is that we will have more and more of a part to play in the post-recession Sussex and Brighton. As recovery comes, people will still not fit onto that recovery. They will be desperately needing jobs. There was a Gallup poll done by Jim Clifton a few years ago where the greatest need that was expressed by people all around the world, this is literally within the last few years since the credit crunch, the greatest expression of need from the human heart universally exploded out as, I just want a good job. It's fascinating. It wasn't what I was expecting, but what people are longing for is that kind of security. And it may be that that's partly what the church is able to provide, not jobs per se, but ability, skill, partnership, helping people to develop so that they're able to build a life that's constructive, not just for eternal reasons, but even for temporal reasons, which certainly points in the direction of eternal realities. We will find that we are assisting the world by playing an assistant role. Interestingly, sometimes Christians like Wilfrid don't get famous. Wilfrid isn't known about. He's not one of the great heroes of church history. That's often the case. It may be that many of us will do far more than we're given credit for. We play the assist role on a team. You know, we set goals up rather than score them. We're the ones that are behind the scenes helping to make things happen. I remember coming across a fascinating documentary about the Salvation Army on the radio just a few years ago. A lady, not a Christian by any means, had done some research and she said, the Salvation Army has never received the credit it deserves for what it did to bring social change to England. Absolutely phenomenal transformation through its powerful influence. And this was done not because it was necessarily looking for glory and credit, but simply by serving, building communities, building institutions that help society. And she said many of the things that we've put at the feet of the secular liberal conscience to help the West, the things that we've said, well, that was done because of the trade union movement, that was done because of this movement, that movement, that movement. These things actually, if you dig further and actually dig in with your research more carefully, you realize the Salvation Army were the key players, the key catalysts in getting things changed in the late Victorian era. And as Christians, we know that because our success is secured in Christ, because we know him, because he's loved us and received us and adopted us and affirmed us and told us that we are successes by his mercy, we don't need to operate in business simply to create our own legacy. We can operate as servants as we've been led to by him. I need to stop because I want to make time for others, but I just wanted to leave you with that simple encouragement, that simple statement of where we want to go, but also the key part in broad terms that you guys can play in the future. There'll be much more to come as the day goes on. Back to you now.
That's great.
I really appreciate the concepts, or to be honest, the potential for being people who assist what goes on in this city as we seek its welfare. And maybe you've always wondered, well, you know, I know I can make money, I know that I'm passionate about making money, I know how to do it. Well, maybe a seed's been sown in you that you could be very much a part of what it means to assist the city in its welfare, and we find our welfare. That's great, fantastic. Now we're going to take a 2-minute break.